Welcome to our AJAG PD Pod, the place for discussion, debate, and learning about all things accounting. Our hosts, Ivan Tabak, Jonathan Tucker, are CPAs that have been in practice for more than 3 decades. Together, they bring varying experience and viewpoints to the table, not to mention a little humor, too. Join us as we talk through current issues and hot topics, tap into expert guest insights, and enjoy the odd walk down AJAG memory lane. Before we begin today's podcast, please note, although the educational material within the podcast has been carefully prepared, none of the persons involved in the preparation of the material accepts any legal responsibility for its contents or for any consequences arising from its use. As well, the podcast material and the references contained therein may reflect laws and practices that are subject to change. Advice regarding a particular fact or situation should always be reviewed by a qualified professional. This podcast is produced and distributed by AJAG Professional Development. For more information about AJAG or any of its offerings, please visit ajag.ca.
Hi, welcome to AJAG PD Pod Episode 9, and this one is called Dear CRA. I'm Ivan Tabak.
And I'm Jonathan Tucker.
And
after tax season is over.
It's over.
Finally.
Corporate season, personal season, and quite
a year.
It was the worst year I've ever had. Thanks to our good friends at finance, and I guess you can't blame CRA.
Was it
that much? But
it was just one thing after another, right?
Yeah. Trusts.
Two returns due this year for UHT. Finally.
If you had the non-resident, and if you were anybody else, then you didn't have to bother. Yeah. But while doing this, I started thinking about all the small things that CRA could be doing, or administrative options and things that could make life so much easier for us. So I started keeping a list, and that led to today's podcast.
Yeah.
So why don't we talk about it? So again, these are not tax policies, nothing like that. It's just really administrative
simplification issues
to avoid issues.
And maybe folks out there have got some suggestions to add to that.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure there's many more that exist than we've got here.
Yeah.
But these were the ones that came to mind when we were going through it. So the first one that I came across, like I had a somebody that came to me. They needed like 10 years of returns filed, and they said, "Oh, it doesn't matter. I'm getting refunds and whatever." And yeah, they were getting refunds, except, you know, a couple of years they had 2 or 3 jobs, and they ended up with CPP and EI overpayments.
Right.
And guess what? If you file your tax return claiming more than 4 years late when you have a CPP overpayment, you don't get it.
Yeah.
And for EI, it's 3 years.
Mm.
Now, why 3 versus 4?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's
maybe
one thing,
and that's a harmonization point.
Maybe. But regardless, how is that fair? What's the point? What's the logic in penalizing somebody? Mm. They're not penalized for the income tax, just for the CPP and EI, which to anybody, you know, is just the same as income tax.
Mm.
I have no idea why that policy exists, but, you know.
Different legislation, different acts, I suppose, much in the same way as ITCs.
Maybe. I don't know. It's true. I don't know if the rule is in the Tax Act or the other one exactly. But still, I mean, it could end up being a couple $1,000s, depending on how much money they made and whatever.
And now with penalties, or now with interest being what they are, the rates of interest. Oh, we're going the other way.
I'm talking about refunds.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, okay. So let's say the year they end up owing money.
But
in tax,
well,
but it would have been all partially offset by these credits. They don't get the credit,
right.
So then there's extra.
That is where the interest.
Yeah. So absolutely. I just don't see how that.
Where's the fairness in that?
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Another one that is very often comes across is when you have one spouse with a balance owing and the other spouse with a refund. Why isn't there a mechanism to offset? There should be some kind of election that they would each sign and agree and offset it.
I think Quebec has a mechanism for that on their return, where you can apply a balance across.
Yeah. So there's the one benefit of filing two.
That's right.
Two tax returns in Quebec, but you know, again, like what's the logic? So
we do it with tuition, for example, right, where we sign off on transferring credits.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So it is possible. Yeah.
I mean, it's got to be doable. It's not a super complicated process, but you know, and then how far do you take it? Is it just the ending balance that gets offset, or but if the person who owed money was subject to let's say a late filing penalty because they owed money, but the spouse had a credit,
right?
Would that credit offset the debit and then
offset the
penalty?
Right.
My guesses would be they wouldn't take it that far,
right.
Just the pure ending balance. Mm. But I'd be happy enough with just that. And then if you talk about installments and balances, and I'm not even sure of the answer to this, but on a corporate return, you can do it on personal too, where you want to apply your refund to the following year's installment account, does the effective date of the credit that's payment going into the next year,
right?
Does the date match the date that portion of the payment was originally made, or is it only effective the day of the actual refund being issued? So if I make a $10,000 installment in September on a December corporate year end, and then I end up with a $3,000 refund, and I say transfer it to the next year, and that's the following June when it's filed, is the effective interest date that June or the original date that I made it?
The original payment date.
Right.
Yeah.
Because that could affect the interest.
The money sitting on account, it just hasn't been applied.
Yeah, on the short paid and so on. You know, it would be fair if it was the date that payment was originally made, because they've been holding it since.
Yeah.
I don't know for sure what that is.
Yeah.
I'm kind of guessing it's the date of the assessment or the actual transfer of the excess cash.
Yeah.
So you'd lose the benefit of having had that money for.
Yeah, I think it goes back to the original payment date. So the money sitting
on the transfer of the installment? Of the refund? I'm not saying transfer an installment. I'm saying you make a $10,000 installment.
Yes.
You have a balance owing, you have a tax payable of $8,000.
Yeah. So you've got a $2,000.
You have a $2,000 refund.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you say, okay, put the refund to next year.
Right.
Instead of issuing a check.
Right.
So when it goes to next year, is the effective interest date of that the date the original $10,000 was paid,
or the start of the next year,
or the date the actual transfer happened?
Right.
Out of from one tax year installment account to the other. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure.
I think it goes to the first date of that next year. So, because that's when you would be concerned with installments at that point, right? Would be day one of the next.
Right.
Of the next period.
I'll have to check that one.
Yeah.
Didn't think of that one beforehand, but again, it's,
Yeah. And it's becoming, are you finding it's becoming harder to navigate the CRA website? What's your sense of the ease for clients? Like, we're oftentimes hopping onto a call, like a Zoom call with a client, saying, okay, share your screen so we can walk you through where we need.
No, I haven't had that. My clients.
No.
I mean, some clients go on and they'll download slips or they'll look at something and misinterpret it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if it's a question of difficulty. It's, you know.
What about the notices of assessment this year? Did you have clients saying, oh, I've got until May 29th to pay my bill because the express notice of assessment said, here's the amount that you'll owe on May 29th. Did you run into
that? Yeah, people have commented on that,
yeah.
Not knowing that you should have paid it by April.
Yeah. Or people that are saying, listen, I've already made my payment and they're charging me interest because it shows interest.
Right.
Right.
Not knowing that it,
yeah.
It just crossed. So yeah. Why can't they just, you know, wait, you know, a few days, let's say, before processing it to make sure that payments get caught?
Yeah, yeah. The explanation, I think, needs clarity. Because it was difficult for clients who I got a lot of emails from people saying, but I've already paid my $54,000. Why am I being charged interest?
Right. So, like, oh, just wait. They'll send you another notice reversing it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's again, it's just a duplication from CRA having to do that and issue in a second notice.
Yeah.
And clients get...
frustrated.
They get upset.
And they automatically assume you've made a mistake, right?
Of course.
That's
you didn't file? How come?
Yeah. Anything else?
What else?
What else are you running across? What's on our authorization of authorized representatives? Are you finding that?
They're
really trying to simplify
it, right?
Yeah. Not so much so.
No.
Yeah.
And when you had to fill out the form and have the, you download the form, you send it to the client to fill out, send it, then you upload it.
Yeah.
Half the time it never was processed.
Yeah.
And now they have to log in and author and approve you when you've sent in the request.
Yeah.
But how many clients of yours actually have a corporate login?
Yeah.
Because for personal, they sign the form, and you e-file it, and you have access.
Yeah.
So why is it different for corporate?
Yeah.
You know, I don't really understand. But even if there is a reason, then, you know, for the registration process for the My Business account for so many people is just very
cumbersome,
though it's really not.
Yeah.
But it does take a while. It's not an instantaneous.
What about corporate income tax installment notifications?
Yeah. Well, that's another one I've never understood. Why? Why do they send? Why
personal,
can they send
individual.
Personal reminders and amounts to pay and not corporate tax and not GST?
Yeah. Or trust for that matter.
Or trust.
Yeah.
And you know any. Right? The calculations are the same.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you want to use a different method for calculating your installment,
it's
you're free
to.
But at least it's a reminder.
Yeah.
You know, what I do for large, you know, clients that usually owe more taxes, when I do a year end, I send them an installment schedule for the next year and the following year.
Mm.
So I send them 2 years of installment because if I don't get their year end stuff until
we do
three four, 5 months.
We do 3 months additional payments.
But you know, it's a big enough achievement for them to look at the first year, forget about the second year one.
Literally, but we say to people, please read this entire email because oftentimes people just read what they want and then move on, and then they haven't paid their tax installments.
Yeah,
so we're that specific now.
But why? But why? Why can't installment reminders be sent out with a schedule, a recommended schedule? It just causes people to.
It's one more point.
Stressed, you know, when they realize they haven't made the installments or they forgot to make the installments or.
Yeah.
So then there's interest and penalty interest and.
What about.
And the stress of all these catch up payments.
Yeah. What about standardization? We were talking about this beforehand, standardization of government forms. T5 slips were...
T5, T3s, I find especially.
Yeah.
When you're trying to fly through
returns. Yeah. One bank has it a different way than another bank. It's the same form, but it's different.
They try to be fancy and incorporate their own unique style into the slip. Yeah. And, you know, you're trying to fly through and do data entry and you know, box 25 is on the bottom left of one slip and the top right of another slip and the bottom right of a third slip.
Yeah.
You know, I think it should be standardized.
I think the other thing they need to standardize on the T4A, where there's several boxes for box 105.
To specify
what call it a different number and specify what it is. So, but I'm finding now there's a matching program for that. I'm getting letters
for the 105 box 105s.
Yeah. So I don't know if you're running across that, but for a full-time student.
I've never had one. I've never had the 105 questioned on on a matching, because a lot of times clients don't, you know.
Their income levels
it's not even the income. They don't, you know, half the time you don't even get those slips.
Yeah.
But they're not usually taxable.
Yeah.
So I've never had a problem with that.
Yeah.
But we'll wait and see. I'm sure our friends will make it a problem somehow.
Come up with
at some point.
Idea. Wait times? How are wait times? I'm finding clients are waiting an hour and a half, 2 hours.
On the phone?
On the phone.
And so sometimes you get the callback option.
Yes.
And sometimes you don't.
Sometimes you don't. I know. It's not consistent.
Yeah. And the callback usually works pretty well. Sometimes I never get the callback.
Yeah.
But for the most part, that option works. And that's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you can't really complain about that. But when you don't have it and you need to talk to somebody.
Yeah.
You're on the hold for an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
Then you get someone, then they put you on hold, then it disconnects.
Yeah, where it's 4:45 at night, and you just know.
Yeah.
Your 2 hours of sitting there is going to be complete waste.
Right.
So the other thing I'm, you know, maybe I'm just...
Oh, sorry. I had one this past year where we got disconnected, and the guy called me back.
Mm.
I
was shocked.
Could not believe it.
Yeah.
I said to him, I said, you know, there's got to be an award for something, because in 30 odd years of practice, I've never had a CRA agent call me back.
Yeah. At best, you can hope they've made a note or two on the client's file, right? But not to actually call you back.
And then, so you don't have to start from scratch. Yeah. But the guy actually called back.
Yeah.
So that was...
Another area is payment, processing payment. I've got some elderly clients where now if there's a balance over $10,000, and I know this is still being implemented, but for some, I just hate to see the options for payment being narrowed so that it's just online payments or going to the bank. If somebody wants to write a check and send it to the government, why is that such a problem?
I don't know. Maybe
just think of elderly clients at the end of April trying to get out, or they can't get out. So it's why is a check any less valid form of payment than paying online, right? So
there's got to be some logic behind it, you know, but I'm not sure it, you know, it's strong enough logic to inconvenience some people.
Yeah.
So maybe it's got to
help. And the stress it causes for an elderly person who's trying to figure out how they're going to get their payment to the government. Remember, we used to have offices we could go to. There were CRA offices and Dropbox, right? And those were taken away. And now you have to make payment in a certain form, or that's coming in a prescribed form. It's just becoming more and more difficult for some people. So anyway, my pet peeve. T3 forms.
Maybe if they owe that much tax, they can afford to get a
Helping them with that, but it becomes a problem paying at the bank because you can't get them out. So the other is T3 slips and T3 returns. Why can't they name them differently? You're trying to explain to a client, we've got a T3 slip. Oh, and you got a T3 return. And they don't understand the difference.
Yeah.
Okay. So.
Yeah. Especially now, this past year with the expanded filing requirements, using that term more frequently. Yeah. They
changed the name of the slip or the number. Yeah. So calculating or optimizing disability tax credit and the medical, the different medical credits is a nightmare.
It is. It's hard enough for accountants who at least have some familiarity with it, but but for the average person filling it out for themselves or for a parent, you know, with attendant care, nursing home, retirement home.
A letter from the doctor.
Yeah, which one do you need the disability tax credit to claim, or which one you don't? Or if you don't have it, do you need a letter from the doctor to claim it? And if the expense is over X dollars, is it better to claim the expense instead of the credit?
And I don't know.
Do you claim both? And yeah, you can check a box off in the software, but you know it for us. But for somebody who's manually doing it, or even someone who's using one of the and software products.
I can't imagine their diagnostics are going to, even if they could prioritize or optimize how they would explain it simply to somebody.
Exactly.
Right.
So mistakes are made, things are missed.
Yeah.
Someone might claim it one way, have it denied,
and
not know how to go back and fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or just be completely oblivious to the fact.
Yeah.
Yeah. That they've missed something.
That whole area, I think there's a huge amount of tax that's being
missed,
refunds missed because it's just too complicated for the average person to understand.
And what qualifies? But I mean, what qualifies is a different question. But just as a matter of process, it's just very difficult.
Yeah. And a lot of the nursing homes or retirement homes, some of them give you a good breakdown of the expense, but some of them don't.
Mm.
And I've had clients where they've gone
the care the portion versus the personal portion.
Yeah. And the prescriptions sometimes they lump it all in. Sometimes it's broken out nicely. There should be a mandatory reporting for any of these registered facilities,
right?
To for tax purposes,
even a prescribed form.
Prescribed,
right.
Yeah, I mean they have have a some type of a T,
a T slip
or whatever to break it out to show what.
No, it's a fair point.
Anyway, that's. These things are obvious to I think to me and yet CRA will concentrate on
that's
on
part
other
of
areas to change and
I suppose that's part of the purpose of sessions like this is to throw out ideas. I'm sure there's other there's Canadian Tax Foundation and those, but at the practical level of preparing returns and simplifying that process, it's becoming incredibly complicated.
It is. And that, anybody with, you were talking about, having returns fully automated or completed just for basic returns with information. And I'm not sure, I thought it actually even existed, but maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah.
Where it could be generated, where you could file
and automated
through it,
or it's automatically filed. That's the that's the conversation now.
Or is just automatically filed for you?
Yeah.
Not just populated with the information.
Yeah. I mean, there are other countries that occurs.
Right.
But that's what I'm reading about now. Is I'm seeing that being proposed. But what about if you've got medical expenses? What about if you have employment expenses? Even if you have what seems to be a simple return, a T4, but it isn't that simple,
right?
There could be GST issues. There
dependents.
Yeah.
Okay, so your dependents might be on file with them if you're getting the child tax benefit.
Yeah.
But then, what about child care?
Yeah.
What about
But I think
talked about so yeah. I mean, there's so many things that could be missed.
Yeah, yeah. Even with a simple scenario. I guess we'll have to wait and see how that rolls out. There's enough with what we're already faced with in everyday circumstances that we could go on for a long time.
But just think about it. How many people might want to take advantage of that? Where I don't have to go to my accountant. The CRA will just file it for me.
Yeah.
Well, good for CRA. They're just, you're going to forgo all kinds or possibly lose out on deductions and credits.
Yeah.
Because that's not in the system.
And you know, we've been talking about these things. We haven't even started to talk about how this year, 2024, is going to look with the inclusion rate changes and what the schedules are going to look like now. I mean, that's a completely different topic. But just when we look at the questions, I think one of the items you were raising was CDA balance.
Yeah, yeah.
Another cause for confusion and back and forth with the government verifying balances. And
that's right. So in the old days, right, you could write a letter to and ask for them to approve it, and it could take like a year to get an answer.
Yeah.
Now, if you want the number,
verification,
the answer, it doesn't take nearly as long. They're much, much faster.
Yeah.
But why can't the CDA balance be
online?
Yeah. And there's a link. There is a tab for it.
Yeah.
And it always says amount not available. You know, what's the point? If you specifically request it by filing that Schedule 89, somebody's gathering the information. So why isn't it just done across the board for every corporation?
Yeah. Just like corporate profiles are available for years in advance, why not that balance?
Right. Right. And so that, I think that's something that that definitely, you know, could be looked at and kept current. Yeah. I mean, obviously they've considered it because there is a tab there.
Yeah.
It's just rarely completed. Or in cases where you do see something, it's not going back right to the beginning.
Yeah.
It's
maybe
the last few years.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is
useless. And maybe that's the reason. Right. But have a lump sum balance for shown for prior years, but then you get into inclusion rate issues, I suppose, as well. Right. So the changes in inclusion rates over the
years. Yeah. So it's
a problematic area.
It is.
E-filing, is it immigrants or immigrants? I'm trying to remember, which you can't e-file a return for.
I think it went immigrants.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't e-file.
Yeah, and I'm not sure why that is. But it's usually you're dealing with oftentimes a more complicated situation where people are not familiar with the system they're coming to at the last minute, and then you're finding, shoot, I can't e-file the thing. So now you're running into potentially late filing.
You have those extra forms. And again, you know, there's the I think was it 1161, 12, 31 maybe, or whatever it is, those two forms.
Yeah.
List of assets and deemed dispositions.
And if you don't file those, there's a penalty for...
That's right.
Yeah. For failing to file.
That's right. And I've had so many cases where I do a lot of returns for non-residents who own real estate here, and they're filing the Section 216 returns for the rental. But often when I get the client, we'll look back and see that when they actually left, they never
indicated they were leaving.
They never filed those forms.
Yes.
And so a lot of times we'll go back and do, you know, VDP and get them filed. And I just had one where they denied, the VDP was denied, and I've got to fight with that. But $2,500 penalty.
Yeah. Plus interest. You know, the other thing, and I wish there could be some form is requirement that the government has to notify taxpayers. You know, you get a letter, we think you may have over contributed to your RRSP, for example, and it's 3 or 4 years later and they haven't filed the form, they haven't withdrawn the funds. But I suppose my point would be specific. It appears that your RRSP is over contributed, and as soon as the government's aware of that, notify the taxpayer of that. Now, I know there is some verbiage on the notices of assessment, but it's not nearly as specific. And now with interest rates in addition to penalties and a period of time that can be a couple of years before somebody actually gets that letter, that seems particularly harsh, right?
Yeah.
If they have the information, They expect the taxpayer to be on top of it. Well, the same should go for the government as well. Don't let that hang out there and have interest accumulate. And then the person doesn't have access to VDP because the government's now notified the
right.
person. Just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah. Right. So, no, I agree.
Right.
And the other thing with the RRSP is, you know, I've had clients who have had over contributions and they see the notice on the
yeah.
comment on the slip and they've called CRA and CRA tells them, or not even CRA, like the bank or investment advisor, they say, okay, well, if you want to withdraw the over contribution, you got to fill out the form. And I can't remember the form number, but you know, the cumbersome one where you've got to go back and
the RC 243 or whatever it is, it's
they got to lay out every
period.
Contribution yeah. and every yeah. period and month and year that you've made it,
yeah.
all in order to avoid withholding tax
yeah.
on it.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, I've had to fill those out a couple of times.
Yeah, they're not easy.
It is yeah. so complicated,
yeah. Yeah.
and I just tell clients, just take it out.
Yeah.
They'll withhold the yeah. tax,
and you'll get it. It's back. An installment towards
yeah.
the
and. But, you know, these other, the advisors and the banks, and they don't think of that, yeah. or they want you to fill out this form. And then how long does it take to, it could be months
yeah.
to get that form processed.
Yeah. yeah. And they want all the supporting documentation for that.
Yes.
Right?
You've yeah, got to have every receipt.
The month the contribution went in and the month it came out, that has to be included. So I just tell clients, do not get yourself into that situation because
yep.
it's messy. So
yeah.
The other area has to do, coming back to the person who emigrates from Canada, is notifying their banks.
That oh yes,
they're now not resident, and the withholding tax. I had a client recently who got a letter from CRA saying withholding tax wasn't. Here's how much you owe. For failure to remit withholding tax, hadn't notified the bank. Again, a couple years later, right, when it comes to the surface, and now the client's got a couple of $1,000 of penalties, plus the withholding tax, plus the interest.
Right.
So, I mean, I know there's a guide for CRA on immigrants and emigrants, but is the average person going to be reading that? Probably not.
No.
Right.
But on the other hand, if somebody does leave the country,
yeah.
they have to take some responsibility,
yeah. Yeah.
You know, for their own affairs.
Yeah.
I had a case where a client left the country, and after they left, they had a lump sum payout from a pension plan, like hundreds of thousands of dollars, and they got a T4A, a regular T4A with, I think it was, I forget, it was like a huge, you know, amount.
Any withheld?
Yeah, yeah, withheld. Well, maybe it was $50,000.
Yeah.
Something like that. And we can't claim it on any return because they were non-resident
right.
when it happened. So I filed, you know, request to have... it was a Part 13 return, which there's no form. You just
yeah.
basically send them the information.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with their investment advisors. They didn't, the investment, actually she did advise the investment advisors and they did not convert the account. But so
we had, she had an email or something or other and that wasn't a phone call, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So they, So just recently, it was like 2-3 years after the fact, the advisors went back to all the fund companies and other issuers and had all those slips converted
to non-resident
NR right. slips.
Right, right.
So we've got adjustments there. But this big one, this yeah. 50,000, I'm still
yeah.
fighting to get it refunded. But again, like, you know, if she had just...
Yeah. Well, I've actually...
But that's on her.
Yeah.
It's not...
I've said to some clients who have left the country, who have not, they've, you know, we've filed what returns we need to file and the exhibits to list the property and so on, but they haven't contacted their banks to say they're non-resident. They've got this income. We know what the withholding tax should be. I've said to clients, make a payment on account and let it sit there. Just in case CRA comes back in a couple of years, at least you're not going to have the interest accumulating on it because there's a payment sitting on account. I don't know. Have you ever run across that or not? I don't know any other way around it other than to self-report to the government saying, here's the amount I should have reported for
withholding
tax.
You've done that.
Yeah.
It's
okay.
This part, like it's, they call it part 13 return,
but you
just send them the backup and make a schedule and write a check. And then you'll get an
assessment.
They'll create like a non-resident account number and they assess you on it.
See, these sessions are so useful because I didn't even know that.
Yeah, I didn't know until
I
spoke to someone and that's how I was advised to do it. And then I came across this whole other world of this part 13 self-reporting and all that.
Have you come across the job transition mechanism? Is that what it's called?
I think you just made it up. But... No, we're talking about the CPP and EI.
Yes.
If you have multiple jobs during the year.
And you're still contributing to CPP and it doesn't take it into account. And I guess this is more for the small business in some sense as much as it is for the individual, because any over contribution to those plans, they'll get back, right?
So from the business point of view, I mean, you have
no control.
I mean, a company is contributing on their employee for the period they're working there. Yeah. But for an employee who let's say works half a year, maxes out or pays whatever part into CPP and EI, then starts another job and the calculation starts at zero, and then they've got to wait for a refund. In some cases,
it's a couple thousand bucks.
So, maybe why can't there be some mechanism where the second employer can take into account the contributions made in the first part, and
maybe a waiver for CPP and EI premiums would be
something like that,
a mechanism to do that, right?
I guess it's a question then on how long will it take
to
process the waiver. You got to fill out the form, send it CRA, the year will be over by the time you get it back. But maybe there's some type of an online reporting. Everything else can be filed online. File the form, fill in the amounts, and then you don't have to withhold beyond the maximums.
I suppose the government's going to say until we actually see that there's no way of them being able to validate the request because they won't know how much the employees necessarily paid. Like, how would you give them a pay slip? I suppose a pay slip would be arm's length, third party, right? Here's my pay stub.
When somebody leaves a job, they file, an ROE is filed. So maybe the information from that or on that, you add a box for the current year, how much CPP and EI has been
contributions,
filled.
Yeah.
That gets
because you've got pensionable weeks. You've got that kind of information already there.
So that can get reported.
Yeah.
And then you bring it to the new employer and the new employer can just input that and reduce the employee withholding.
Yeah.
Not necessarily... but not the employer contribution.
Yeah,
that I don't think we'll ever, get away from. But if the employee is entitled to the refund anyway, then why not just give it to them up front? And the same would go for the tax withholding, right? Because how many times do you see somebody who worked two jobs and ends up owing money because
they assume that was their only source of income for the year.
They started zero on the second job.
And they should have been holding 50% or something.
Give the employee the option.
Yeah.
You know, do you want to have it done properly? Nah.
Yeah.
Most people will say, okay, I'll pay it later. But but sometimes people will say, I'd rather pay it now than owe a chunk afterwards.
And especially if in some cases they might have an installment obligation. Right, and enough money hasn't been paid. Would that come into it? We might want to edit this out.
Yeah, not if really there's withholding tax.
Yeah, but if the withholding tax hasn't, and they haven't been paying their installments,
well, that's true. I wonder if that could create an installment requirement where
the following year, or if they had an installment requirement from the prior year and they hadn't been honoring it, and then they take another job and
right, so then they otherwise wouldn't have had a balance owing and
that's
not
right.
have been dinged on installment interest, but
yeah,
having lower withholding on the second job from the beginning would
That's right.
create that situation and cost them interest.
That's right. That's right.
But at least give them the option.
Yeah.
The employee the option. And again, the same way, transfer the information from the first employer to the second.
Yeah.
And then they can withhold tax, you know, considering the bracket that they're starting at in the year instead of starting at zero.
So maybe some of you watching today have your own suggestions on how CRA can, or your pet peeves even about the existing system and how things work. So maybe take a moment and jot your ideas down.
But what I thought I would do, you know, when I have all my free time, is actually lay all these points out in some type of coherent way and, you know, properly document it and then send it into MP or finance or whatever for, you know, whatever good it might do.
Right.
You know, maybe somehow, you know, someone will listen and
feedback.
Get something. And if enough
taxpayer and accountant feedback,
we'll start a petition. We'll get all our fellow accountants and...
Are we going to wrap up today? Are we going to wrap up this podcast?
From the T4 to the T3. The accountants will be free.
Yeah. I see everybody just shaking their heads down in the control room. So,
all right.
So out of all that we've talked about today, what would you say would be your number one priority?
I think the one that would have the biggest impact is advising of income tax and GST installments
for corporations.
For corporations or GST any registrant.
Yeah.
Right? Just installment reminders and populate the numbers the same way they do for personal.
Mm.
Here, you know, they choose one way, but they tell you there's other options on how, you know, how you can do it. But I think that one would probably have the most impact.
I think the one for me would be having the government notify taxpayers as soon as they're aware of an overcontribution. I mean, I know it's on the notice of assessment, but it's so complicated now for taxpayers. There's first-time home savings accounts, there's TFSAs, there's RRSPs, there's RDSPs, and the rules around these are so technical. And so to let that sit, not to mention how difficult it is navigating with your investment advisor to get the statement so that you've got, and there's a charge. Normally, when you ask for these statements or you ask for withdrawal, there's a charge as well. And then taxpayers are faced with heavy penalties on overcontribution plus interest. And to find out about it a couple of years later is, and then to face professional fees to have to deal with it. These are technical accounts, and it seems there's no forgiveness in this area. And the penalties are oftentimes bigger than the amounts themselves by the time
you accumulate. 1% a month?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So that would be my my pet peeve, just giving some relief on that.
Right.
So, but, so give us yours so that we can build on Ivan's list here.
Yeah. So what are your... what are your final thoughts about CRA?
Well, my final thoughts right now is it's summer. I thought it would never get here. And I'm delighted because it's been a tough season. So I think you've said the same thing. This has probably been the hardest year so far.
Yeah.
To date.
What do you think about staggering filing date or filing deadlines? You know, like, why April 30th?
You know, or a harmonization because there are some forms, for example, what did I run across recently? And I fought because we had a June 15th filing deadline, we also had a filing deadline on this particular form, and it turned out, no, it was in April 30th, even though the taxpayer had a June 15th filing deadline. I'm trying to remember what form it was, and we missed it, and it was a penalty. So
for T1 for
it was on it.
Time?
It was a form related to a T1 right. because they had a June 15th filing deadline. And I think it was on immigration. They left the country. They didn't fill out the T1161 form.
But they were self-employed.
Okay. And so we thought, okay, yeah, we'll include that on the June 15th filing, only to find out we've missed that form.
Because other forms, like the T1135,
it would be concurrent with the filing date. That's not the case in this situation.
Wow.
Yeah. And so,
The
harmonization of those dates is right. would be an important thing.
But also consider, there've got to be cutoff dates and there've got to be dates after which you'll have penalties and interest. And, that's all understandable. Yeah. But when you think about, like, I don't know about you, the vast majority of my clients have, corporate clients have December year ends.
Yeah.
You know, everybody loves a calendar year.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard.
Yeah.
And to deal with that volume. So why not maybe have it staggered? And so the first year there's maybe a delay in payments, or the first year you change it, maybe there you
so
still
how do you
have early payment dates, or like in the US where you can file extensions. Now I guess you treat it like an extension in the sense if you make a balance of tax payment, right? Because that's what they do, right?
Yeah.
But if you file for the extension and you end up owing money, I don't think there's not a penalty.
Right.
I guess filing.
Yeah. I guess the only penalty might be a deficient installment penalty.
If you get charged interest.
Yeah.
But, they don't take into account the reality of
a practice
of accounting practice and how it has to be managed and the volume of work.
Well, I think that's what made it so much more difficult this year. It's already busy, and then you add on top of it these additional issues like bear trust,
right,
and change in the inclusion rate, and where now you're being completely distracted from what was already a busy time of year, firstly to come up to speed on the requirements, the impact, think it through, then go through every file, it became extremely stressful.
Yeah.
And I know there were client files where we didn't look at certain things where there could have been planning done because we were already busy enough as it was. So, and I think the stress level in the profession, I've talked to a few people who just said they're at their wit's end just in terms of the managing the stress and the obligation. And with all that penalties that are going up now, I mean, we're dealing with some significant penalties on new things. I'm glad they backed off on and redefined UHT. That's fine, but it didn't come soon enough, right?
Yeah.
Didn't come soon enough. So
yeah.
It's managing the stress of all of this. And being the frontline person trying to figure out when we don't have regulations to go on new pieces of legislation or just the whole budget situation this year and so many questions and we couldn't guide clients, that was just, I wasn't good. Yeah, well, so
I'm glad I'm closer to retirement than at the beginning.
At the start of a career.
Of it because I don't know how much longer I can continue dealing with this. And then you said with the new inclusion rates this coming year, how are the investment advisors or the brokerage firms going to report this?
Yeah. What was it?
Will they?
We read the other day.
Check it out.
On CDA. Do you remember you sent me an email the other day on paying out CDA?
Oh, I read something where you trigger losses this year.
Yeah.
If you trigger losses after June 24th.
Yeah.
Somehow
it could
or other, it
impacted the CDA.
Your CDA account. Yeah. Whereas if you wait until 2025, it doesn't.
Yeah.
And
because the wording of the legislation talked about the year end, I think. I think it had something to do with that. And if you triggered it before the end of the year, how is that going to be handled? Again, sometimes you're talking with some serious amounts of money here, right? And so, We're rambling here.
Yeah.
Well, as we wrap up today's podcast, we just wanted to say thank you to our audience for the incredible support that and the interest that you've shown in these podcasts. We look forward to seeing you again. And as we now find ourselves in the summer, we wish each of you a good summer, a safe summer as well. Make sure you visit the ajag.ca website to see upcoming courses that are being offered throughout the summer and into the fall. Check out our calendar at ajag.ca.
Blogs
as well. Lots of new information. Our blogs are coming out at least bi-weekly now with updated information. So keep an eye out for those as well. Have I missed anything?
Sign up for the, if you go to the website and sign up for the email list, you'll get notified of new courses, podcast releases, blog releases.
Yeah, absolutely. And,
all of that. So
we wish you a good day. Enjoy your summer, everyone.
Thanks for
listening. Take care.